Well, hello and welcome back into Riverbank Riches with Desmond Taylor. We're navigating financial wisdom. Got a good show for you today. We're talking about the three worlds of money: banking, insurance, and Wall Street. Each of them have a purpose potentially in your portfolio. So how do you use it? What are some of the pros and cons? And of course, there are some misuses for each of these worlds. So we'll discuss that today with Desmond. Welcome in. How are you today?
Good, good. Happy to be here again. Ready to get the second show rolling out to everybody.
Yeah, same here. And, you know, we went through our first episode, which we kind of laid the foundation, got to know you a little bit better, got to know CLC Financial and the work that you do with clients and your experience nearly 50 years in the industry. But the one question that I forgot to ask, and we got off afterwards, and I said, I don't know why I didn't ask you this when we're trying to get to know you a little bit more, but what's the deal with the Golden Frenchie?
So that's the mascot of the show. I have a French bulldog, and I thought that this would fit really well with the show. One, kind of shows a little bit of the inside of my life in the seminars that I do. I actually show Theodore up there, and he's going on 2 years old. But it also plays into the show as well. Of, you know, the show is called Riverbank Riches. There's a couple of different meanings behind that. Of course, we talked about how all of the offices are along the Cape Fear River. So that, you know, that's the whole point of the river. But there's also, when you think of the most fertile grounds, sometimes are right next to the river, the riverbanks. But it also kind of plays into that old, you know, I think steamboat Louisiana theme that I like going on for the show. And a little bit of gold in here kind of makes it pop out.
I love it. It's unique. It definitely is unique to you and to the show. So I'm glad to have it. I got done and I said, what's the deal with the Frenchie? The most obvious question probably anybody would ask is, what's the deal with the dog that's sitting there next to you? So cool to hear that. All right. So let's jump into this today. And again, if you have questions as we go through this and you want to kind of follow up and talk about the banking world, insurance, kind of how each one of these might fit into what you need and get you closer to those retirement goals and those goals of financial freedom, clcfinancial.com is the website, but you can also call 910-323-5700. So we'll go through each one of these individually, the three worlds: banking, insurance, Wall Street. Starting with banking, pretty obvious, I think, for most people, right? It's probably the most conservative of the three, but what are, I guess, the primary uses that people would have for banking?
Yeah, so a lot of clients come in and they talk about diversification, and you know, you have mutual funds and you have stocks and you have ETFs within your stock portfolio, but you need account diversification too. And account diversification means a lot of things, but you do use the banking sector for money that you may immediately need, or you may need in times of you know, a recession, or if your stock portfolio is down. Now, we'll talk about a little bit more in a different episode of how you can, you know, have these different safety accounts and maximize the use out of them. But really, for the banking, what you want to think about is, okay, you need your checking account. What if something immediate happens, right? You run over a nail with your tire. Your air conditioning goes out, or fridge, or, you know, need a new roof, something like that. And your checking account is that immediate access. It's not going to pay you a lot of interest at all. I mean, you're talking pennies on the dollar, if you're lucky. Your savings account, depending on where you put it, you can get some high yield savings account. You can, you know, depending on where interest rates are at the time right now, you can get some savings account around, you know, 4 or 5%. You can get a pretty decent rate on it. And then your money market and CDs, those will pay a little bit more interest as well, even than your savings. But you have to tie it up for a certain amount of time. And when you tie it up for that certain amount of time, yes, you still do have access to it in case of emergency, but you'll owe the interest back to the bank if you touch it before it has matured.
So those are kind of some of the best uses. I guess, you know, there's some pros in there, like you kind of already pointed out, right? Access and the availability of this money in case of emergencies. What's the biggest con?
Accessibility. Right. Accessibility. Yeah. Okay. Accessibility is really what you want to use your checking and savings in the banking world for. Because if you leave excess in there, then of course you're losing to inflation. Last year, inflation, you know, was 8%. So you're really losing to inflation the money that you leave in your bank account. But everybody has day-to-day expenses.
And that's the biggest con then, right, is that you're going to lose that money, especially in the inflation rates we're in right now and kind of where we are. If you have you're overweight in that banking world, then that's potentially you're falling behind.
You do need to spread it out too. If you have all your money in banking, you need to make sure that it's $250,000 in each account as well, or under that, so that you don't exceed that FDIC limit. We all saw what happened to Silicon Valley Bank. Even though the federal government backed it up, you know, it was a quick decision to, hey, we're, let's insure all the depositors. You know, that decision's kind of, it's not set in stone. It's up to, you know, the circumstances at the time. But a lot of people come in and they say, you know, well, I haven't lost anything in the market. Well, you know, with checking account, you are guaranteed a loss to inflation. So there is, every year your purchasing power degrades, and even though you may open your statement up and it may, you know, have the same on there or a little bit more because of that small amount of interest you got, you're losing purchasing power guaranteed because of inflation.
Yeah. So what's the biggest, I guess, misuse? Is it just having too much money in banking? Just having that kind of fear of investing or taking on too much risk, so people just end up parking too much money in the bank?
Yeah. Having too much in there, having, like you said, that overweight in retirement in a checking or savings account or even a money market or CD. It's not maximizing the way that money could be working for you. It certainly is, people would believe it's safe, but again, inflation plays a negative role on that safety as well.
All right, we're talking about the three worlds of money, basically the three primary areas where you can invest your money and how they work, some of the pros and cons. Insurance is next. Now, this is, a rabbit hole we could really go deep into, and I know you work a lot with insurance and you have a lot of different strategies that you can employ for someone, but let's kind of, we'll keep it higher level. So what are some of the best uses then that you find for insurance?
So Ben, let's do a quick background real quick on the firm. So the firm originally started with property and casualty business. Then it transitioned over into life and health. And now we do securities and, you know, Medicare. We do a holistic approach, like we mentioned in the last episode, where we kind of handle everybody's needs in retirement, or try to. So the firm here has a really rooted background in insurance. I would say that we specialize in it. A lot of the guys here are still only insurance-only people, and they've been doing that for, you know, 30 plus years. You need insurance in regards to life insurance enough to replace a loss of income. So, you know, I've had some clients in here, and the big question is, how much insurance do I need? Well, you don't want to be overinsured. You can be overinsured, and you can actually, you know, be paying a lot for insurance that you don't need. But you don't want to be underinsured either. The amount of life insurance you need is dynamic. It depends on the person, but it needs to be enough to, if something happens, God forbid, that your family can continue on their daily needs, and with you not in the picture. And we see this a lot with people, you know, head of households that are the primary wage earners. Maybe you're young and you have kids in college. You know, will those kids be able to still go to college, or will they, you know, have to take out these loans? Will you be able to cover that? Whereas if you were here, you would. Well, if you're gone, can you still? Even if one of the spouses could pick up another job, there's going to be this, you know, maybe that spouse hasn't been working for a while. They've been taking care of the kids, so they haven't been in the job market. So do you really have enough insurance to cover them while they're doing this transition? It's hard enough losing a family member, but you really need to make sure that your family is financially stable. Another reason for life insurance, for especially in retirees, is you want to live your retirement, right? You've worked all these years, and you want to, you know, ideally spend this money, travel, see family, do the things that you want to do. And the life insurance is a way of replacing that money that you've spent in retirement to the surviving spouse. So, you know, you have a client come in with, you know, $1 million portfolio or so, and you're planning out their retirement, and they want to spend this. Maybe they want to fly first class. They want to go travel. They want to go to Europe. Well, that's going to, you know, that's going to take money to do that. And when that one passes, the medical expenses probably would be higher because the surviving spouse is older. And now that surviving spouse is filing individually, so the taxes will be higher. So it's really not any cheaper for one spouse to survive than it is two, but primarily taxes and, you know, medical expenses go up as you age. So that life insurance is a way of, you know, allowing you to do the things that you want and make sure that your loved one, that, you know, your loved ones and your surviving spouse is adequately positioned to continue until their days have come.
Well, I know you have a lot of kind of creative uses of life insurance, so we don't have to necessarily get into this one, this episode. Maybe that's something we get into a little bit further. But if you want to explore maybe some of the uses of life insurance and how it could fit into what you're trying to accomplish, again, clcfinancial.com. What are some of the cons then for insurance? Why may you decide, I don't need as much insurance, or maybe I don't need to put as much money in this world?
Yeah, so you want to make sure that you do it appropriately. There's a lot of out there about, you know, buy a term, invest the difference. So you need to make sure the type of life insurance that you're getting is the right fit for you. There's different types of life insurance and different, there's, you know, just off the bat, there's universal, indexed, whole life, and term. And so, you know, all out of these three, making sure that you have the right fit for your lifestyle, your needs at the time. Talking about life insurance as a whole, there's a con. It's just about your, what stage in life are you at and what type of insurance do you need at that stage, you know, financial situation, age, things of that nature, to make sure that you're covered adequately.
So when you round it off with like the misuses of insurance, is the biggest thing, just kind of based on what I've heard from you so far, either putting too much, having a policy that's bigger than what you need, so putting too much money into that world when it's not necessary, and then also not having the right, I guess, policy for what your needs and your goals are.
It could be. You know, a lot of people, you talk about insurance policies lapsing, and that could be you're overinsured, but you're underfunding the policy. So, you know, I've had people in here actually, you know, sometimes try to negotiate the insurance premiums, and you can't negotiate the insurance premiums. But what you can do is, you know, you can have $1 million policy, and let's say that that policy, you know, costs, you know, X amount every year. Well, you can underfund that policy, meaning you can take it out and then you can actually give the insurance company less money than it costs to actually maintain the life insurance. And if you do that over time, of course, the life insurance won't be there anymore because there's an internal cost of life insurance and it typically goes up with age. So that's another, you know, transition into it, is that if you're paying a set premium, the cost of insurance goes up over age. So if you don't start off with a high enough premium, when you get to a certain age, that life insurance actually won't have enough money within the policy to continue on. And a lot of people, this can rub people a lot of times the wrong way because they think that they're being taken advantage of. And it was really, they just weren't set up right from the start. Another misuse is we have, you know, some people that may come in and they've had term insurance their whole life. So you see, you know, buy term, invest the difference. That's everywhere. If you do the numbers on it, it actually, because, you know, life insurance, the withdrawals that you take out from life insurance can be tax-free. But if you have term insurance, and it, you keep rolling it, you know, and statistically you keep on living longer and longer, and people keep on living longer and longer every year, eventually the term's going to be just unaffordable. You know, if you're a Rockefeller, it's going to become unaffordable as, you know, the older that you get. And so a lot of people will come in, and Congress passed a law that says that you can't just, you know, the insurance companies have to give the option to continue that term policy, but that they don't have a cap on what it could be. So in other words, you could have a $500,000 term policy, but then when you're 90 years old, well, the premiums for that may be unaffordable. They may be $100,000 a year to maintain that policy, and that just won't make sense for most people. So you really have to be careful and figure out what type of insurance you need at what stage, and you can always do like a term conversion. So in other words, if you have a term policy, you can actually convert it to a whole life policy at the rating that you were issued at and age. So there's a lot of nuances to it. So you just really have to understand it and make sure that you're not setting yourself up for disaster, because then you'll get mad at the industry, you'll get mad at the insurance companies, when in reality it just wasn't set up right from the start and weren't explained properly.
Very good. Well, a lot of strategy goes into the insurance portion of the investing. So let's finish things off with our third world, which is Wall Street. I know you have a lot of experience in this world. You kind of, as we talked about on the first episode, you were really into this and paid a lot of attention to this early on in your life, and which kind of drove you into this profession as well. So I know this is the most aggressive of all of them, right? And this is where you're trying to get the most return. So let's talk about first the best uses of the Wall Street world.
There can be a bad rap on the Wall Street side, but in the past, you know, 20 years, 30 years, it's really cleaned up. You have, you know, movies like The Wolf of Wall Street that everybody saw and things with penny stocks and that happened. But the transparency now is the best that it's ever been. It's the most investor-friendly market that we've ever seen. It's as the industry as a whole has seen ever. There's more transparency. There's more disclosures. There's more, you know, types of laws and regulations on fees and, you know, what you can do, what you can't do, what the advisor has to, you know, disclose to you in regards to best interest and things of that nature. And there is this side of Wall Street, you know, the back end trading that happens between the larger firms, but on the level that we're at with the individual, the amount of disclosures and amount of transparency that we have to provide has come so far. We're talking, you know, guys in the industry here, even here, that to open up an account, it was like one or two pages, right? You know, sign here. Now sometimes it's like taking out a mortgage. And it's, you know, we try to speed up that process a lot, but, you know, making sure that the client understands it the whole way through, but the amount of disclosures that has to be, you know, even sometimes read aloud is just come a long ways from where it was.
I would have guessed that a lot of the pros and cons deal with return and risk, right? I mean, obviously it's the big pro is, hey, you know, you got a good chance to outpace inflation, you know, build on, grow your money. But with the other side of that, the big con is that you do put a lot of that money at risk. Is that the primary pro and con, or well, what else would you add to that?
I would say at the basic level, that's the, you know, the pro and con. You're going to, you know, if you look back over, people talk about, you know, there's clients that come in and say that, you know, or people that have come in, I would say some clients, and they're like, you know, I've lost, you know, in 2008, I lost so much money. Well, did you pull that money out? You know, what happened to that? Because if I, you know, pull up a graph right now of the S&P and backtrack it, it took about give or take 5 years for that money, even at the peak right before 2008 hit, and you actually were at that trough. You know, you have these peaks and troughs. At the peak there, it took about 5 years to get back to that peak. So when people come in and they say they've lost a lot of money, there is risk, right? But you can diversify a lot of that risk out by or what we call unsystemic risk. In other words, buying one individual company, and like Boeing, for example, had a bad management decision. I like to use this example all the time. They made a bad management decision and that tanked the stock. Well, if you had an index like the S&P 500, you can diversify a lot of that risk. Now, you may not get as high a performance, but the risk is diversified in retirement. You know, most retirees only need about a 5% return on their money to sustain their retirement. So just saying that the pros and cons is as simple as interest and in inflation doesn't do it as much justice as saying, okay, this money here, ever since inception of the S&P, has always had a positive return over the long term. So just thinking that, you know, the con is, oh, well, I can lose money. Yes, but over what time span are we talking about? We talking about 2 years? Yeah, very, you know, very likely. You know, we talking about 20 years? It's gonna be hard. You know, you really, the timing just really has to be against you in that aspect.
Well, let's close out then with some of the misuses. How, where do you find people often don't get the most out of Wall Street or make some missteps and can you fail or have some issues with this area?
Trying to play Wall Street and trying to outsmart Wall Street. You know, you talked about some of the first cables that were ever put undersea was from New York to London. And that was by these Wall Street companies because data, they wanted instant. They wanted instant data between these trading desks. So trying to outsmart it is one of the biggest misuses that we see from clients. There was a, you know, sometimes people will come in and we talk about market timing. Oh, you know, the market's going to go down. I need to pull some of my asset out now. Well, we've planned for this, right? You've come in, we've sat down, we've gone through, we've done, you know, the due diligence, and we've sat down and had these conversations. We've planned for this, and while, you know, ultimately it's your money, we do, you know, what you say, but we try to give you the best advice on it. This is a great example I like to use is people like to think of stocks as these, like, you know, these things that they just buy and sell, like poof, like, you know, Fugazi things. And it's really not. When you're buying a stock, you are buying a company. You know, why do you buy Apple? Well, you have an iPhone every day. Your college, you know, son or daughter goes to school every day and they have a MacBook. When you're buying that stock, you are buying a piece of that company. You are an owner in that company. There is, you know, you have owner, you have stock rights, you have all of these things that prove that you are an owner of this company, and you even get dividends off some of these companies. You know, if they're profitable and they're well established, a lot of them pay dividends. And so just trying to buy and sell and, you know, time the market and thinking that these are not, you know, that you're buying into this just for a short hold, you really need to be, you know, the brains isn't as much as discipline. When you think of the great investors, you think of Warren Buffett, you think of Charlie Munger, you think of these guys who have, you know, made these companies that basically just own other companies. One of the best things that Warren Buffett said is they asked him, you know, he owns Dairy Queen. Why did you buy Dairy Queen? And he's like, people love ice cream. You know, who doesn't love ice cream? You're always going to buy ice cream. You think of why he owns, you know, Coke. Imagine if Coke, how many Cokes are sold across the world. When you go anywhere in the world, you find a Coke. Yeah. Imagine if Coke raised the price of their Coke by 10 cents. What kind of revenue does that generate? That's the company that you're buying into. You're buying into something that, you know, like Coke, that could raise the price of their drink by pennies, and it generate hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. And then that gets a return back to you. Now, the stock market is about 80% emotion, 20% fundamentals. And then you have the bond market, which is about 80% fundamentals, 20% emotion. So emotion plays into a lot of it. But if the company is profitable and selling a good product, they will sustain through this turbulence. Apple's, you know, their iPhone sales have only increased. They make a good product. People use their product. They sometimes it's too good. You know, you get an iPad, you get a Mac, you get an iPhone, it integrates so well. Boeing, for example, Boeing was selling, you know, great planes. And the management started to move away from quality and safety, and ultimately the stock tanked. But it goes back to the product that they're selling. So don't think of it as just these, you know, things that you need to buy and sell. Think of the company that you're buying, and do I use that company every day? And it's really hard to go wrong when you buy a good company that has great management.
Well said and well put. And I think that gives us a pretty good understanding of these three worlds, right? I mean, there's obviously you can go much deeper, and I know you do drill down a lot more with clients and talk through different strategies for each of these worlds, how much you should put into each one of these worlds and within those worlds where you should have your money allocated and these sort of things. So if you have questions, again, the best place to start is to log on clcfinancial.com. You can schedule a time to meet with the team there. You can learn more about the team. Obviously, you can find out more about their offices, but if you want to call, you can always do that as well at 910-323-5700. So a really interesting conversation, Desmond, and I appreciate you taking us through each one of these. I think there's some really good insight within there, and I know for anybody that's maybe looking to set up a meeting and sit down and actually begin talking with you guys, what's the first kind of initial meeting look like for you?
Yeah, so for the first meeting with us is really just trying to get to know the person. You know, what is your tolerance? Because we have all of these efficiencies and all of these numbers and calculators that we can run. But it comes down to that unknown variable, which is the person. So figuring out the person's risk tolerance, figuring out what that person is trying to accomplish. That's the biggest for us. Getting to know you. Are you a saver? Are you a spender? You know, how do you want to live retirement? You know, what do you want to do? What do you want to accomplish? That's the biggest step for us, and that's the first step for us is getting that foundation. You don't build a house without laying the foundation.
Very good. Again, clcfinancial.com is the website, and the phone number, 910-323-5700. Well, that will do it for us here on Riverbank Riches with Desmond Taylor, Navigating Financial Wisdom. Desmond, thanks for your time. If you've enjoyed the show, please subscribe wherever you watch. We'll have another episode coming up again soon. Desmond, we'll talk to you then.
Yep. Thanks, Ben.
Securities and advisory services offered through Creative One Securities, LLC member, FINRA, SIPC, and an investment advisor. CLC Financial Services, LLC, and Creative One Securities, LLC are not affiliated. Licensed insurance professional, we are an independent financial services firm helping individuals create retirement strategies using a variety of investment and insurance products to custom suit their needs and objectives. This material has been prepared for informational and educational purposes only. It is not intended to provide and should not be relied upon for accounting, legal, tax, or investment advice. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. Insurance and annuity products are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying ability of the issuing insurance company. We are not affiliated with any government agency.